Grateful again for another opportunity that we have to be together again, take a few moments of your time in the study of God's Word. Something that I failed to mention this morning with all the things that has been on my mind the last few weeks, I wanted to mention something this morning that is very important for us to remember. Larry Curry is one of the men that we support that preaches in West Lafayette, Indiana. In his last newsletter, if you care to read it, it's been placed on the board that arrived last Friday. Larry's father passed away on June the 14th. And as any of us know that have parents and have lost a loved one, that's a difficult, traumatic experience, especially I know Larry personally, and that he was very close to his father, and it's been a very difficult time for him. And I know that he would appreciate it if we remember him and his family during this time of adjustment. So please keep him and his family in your prayers. This morning, we spent a few moments talking about the man Pharaoh, and we talked about the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. And as I mentioned this morning, we could learn much about the process of things and how things work and how they affect us by looking at these stories of old. Tonight, I want to look at another aspect of the life of Pharaoh. You know, when we live in this life, there's none of us that live this life that are not going to be tempted from time to time to compromise. Now, compromise seems to be an option to many people in many areas of life. And all compromise is not bad. There's times when compromise is something that should be considered. But when we're talking about truth, and when we're talking about things that God has legislated, there can be no compromise. There can be no giving ground. There can be no settling and allowing concession. But many times it seems easier to compromise than to stand your ground. And one of the things that we learn from the story of Pharaoh is that he often tried to get the children of Israel and Moses and Aaron to compromise. He tried to figure a way out that everybody could be happy. Now, isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that what religious people at large are trying to do today? They're trying to find an option where everybody can be happy, where we can keep God happy, we can be happy, and we can all be on kind of an even keel. You know, that all sounds good on paper, but somehow it just never comes off. Because there's some things you can compromise, but there's some things you can never compromise. The Bible tells us in Proverbs chapter 33 and verse number 23, chapter 23, verse 23, to buy the truth and do not sell it. That simply means the truth is not for sale. It's not for the highest bidder. It's not for how I look at it or how I want it to be. The truth is exactly what it is. It's all of our responsibilities as individuals to study our Bible, to examine God's Word, and to make application in our lives as it applies to us. You know, I've told you many times that preachers, all they do is preach a message. They don't make application in anybody's life except one, and that's their own life. Every sermon that Keith's ever preached is first preached to him. It applies first to me, and then to everyone else, if it be true, if it be according to God's will. And it's up to you to make sure that it is in accordance with God's will. So I want to talk about compromise, the five compromises of Pharaoh that Satan still uses today to get us to try to compromise. But you know, in anything that you talk about, you need to define what you're talking about so we make sure that we're on the same page. So what am I talking about when I use the word compromise? Well, let me give you a definition. The word compromise means a settlement of differences in which each side makes a concession. Now, let me say that again. It's when two sides have a difference and each side makes a concession in order to come to some agreement. You know, there might be a lot of concessions I might make in my life. And I'm going to tell you one thing, God doesn't make any concessions. When God deals with truth, God doesn't have to make any concessions Because he's the creator. He's the one that gave the law. He is the one that legislates. He is the one that has the authority. He is God, and he never changes, according to Hebrews 13 and verse number 8. Jesus Christ is the same today, yesterday, and forever. God doesn't have to compromise because he's God. Now, it's true, brethren, there's things that we can't compromise about. And there's times that we ought to compromise instead of trying to bull our way through and have our way. But there are times that Satan's trying to get you to compromise. And it seems like it's just a little thing. But what he's really trying to get you to do is weaken your position with God. And although it doesn't appear that way, underlying, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to weaken you and your relationship with God. And that's what Pharaoh tried to do in his compromises that we're going to study about. There's five. There's five compromises that he used in his dealings with Moses and Aaron that are alive and well today. Let us look back for just a moment. And let us remember that Pharaoh asked a question in Exodus 5, verse 2. We looked at it this morning. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? I know not God, and I will not let Israel go. And so he didn't fear God. He didn't think there was anything that he had that he needed to make any concessions to God. He didn't need to do that because he, in his own mind, thought he was greater than anyone else because he was king of the greatest nation on earth at that time. But he soon learned that God was one to be reckoned with. Now, brethren, what we're going to do, it seems that he was Israel's taskmaster, and he kept them in human bondage for fear of their number. And he kept changing his mind. He would let them go, but it was just deception. It was just to get rid of the plague so it would go away, and then he would go back and he would do exactly what he wanted to do. Well, that was deception. That wasn't honest. But you know what? Satan is, in like manner, tries to keep you in the bondage of sin. He doesn't tell you that. He doesn't expose it as that. But that's really what he's doing. Turn over to Romans 6 for just a moment. I want you to remember something of a principle that we studied about in Romans chapter 6 a few weeks ago. In Romans chapter 6, I believe Brother Sellers talked about this. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slaves to whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? Now, you're going to serve somebody, brethren. You're going to serve God. You're going to serve Satan. And in actuality, if you serve yourself, you're serving Satan for all practical purposes. So you have one or two ways to go. Now, you can serve yourself, but in all actuality, you're serving Satan because that's what he wants you to do. Now, we make a choice. We make a choice who we put ourselves under submission to. And as Israel was put under submission to the Pharaoh of Egypt, Satan is trying to put us under submission to him. And he tries to do every trick in the book to weaken your relationship to God, to weaken your commitment to God, and weaken your desire to put God first in your life. If he can accomplish that, then he's accomplished what he wants to do. You know, you don't have to become a great sinner. Satan doesn't care about that. He doesn't care if you ever commit murder. He doesn't care if you ever become a robber. He doesn't care if you ever become something of one of these vile sins that all of us hate. He doesn't care if you ever do any of that. But if you will just not put God first, if you'll just put him lower on the priority list, Satan is happy. He's done what he sought out to do. He's got you to compromise. And that's what he's seeking to do. And you know what? He's very good at what he does. He's a master at it, if you will. And let's look at how Satan tried to get the children of Israel to compromise. Let's look at the first one in Exodus chapter 5. Exodus chapter 5. Now, you remember what happened. God sent Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh. They had a simple message. Let my people go, that they might go in the wilderness and they can worship me. And you remember what he said. I don't know God. not going to let him go. And so he began to think that he found a way to keep their mind off of God. And so what he determined to do, beginning in verse 6, all the way to verse 18, is he determined to double their burden. And what he did was, they were making bricks. And they had some kind of quota. I don't know how many bricks they had to make a day. The Bible really doesn't tell us. But they had to make so many bricks a day. And making bricks, we're not talking about making bricks in our day and age. We're talking about making bricks with not the ability and the tools that we have today. And so it was very strenuous labor. But he supplied the straw in making the materials that would put the material together that they could bake to make the brick. But he thought, well, I'll just double their burden, and I won't give them the straw, and they'll have to go out and gather it, but I won't decrease the quota, and they'll have to give me the same amount of bricks, and they'll be so busy that they won't have time to think about God. They won't have time to think about their responsibility to God. Well, that didn't work, and then one by one the plagues came. But this first compromise was to double the burden and to keep men busy. And he thought somehow that would weaken their desire to serve God. But you know what? This compromise is alive and well in 1998. You know what life can do to you, folks? It can busy you to death. You can become so busy with life that you forget about everything that's important. I'm not just talking about God. We forget about our family. We forget about things that are precious to us. We forget about things that make our life what they are, and we just simply take them for granted because we get so busy. And you know the excuse we use? I got to scratch out a living. I got to do it while I'm able. And I've got to do it while I'm young and vibrant, while I can put in the hours and I can put in the time. And we use that as an excuse of why we've got to consume all this energy in order to make a living. Well, if the truth be known, is it that we have to make a living, or do we have to put that time in to make what we want? You see, there's a difference in making a living and making what we want. And we can become so busy in life that we forget that we have responsibilities in life. Let me give you some examples, brethren. Husbands and wives. You know what? Your marriage is not going to stay together by accident. You're going to have to work at it. And if you talk to anyone that's been married for any length of time, I mean for a number of years, and you ask them what the key was, one of the things that you are going to learn is that they learned not to take each other for granted. When is the last time, husbands, that you thank God for your wife? Now, if you've got to think about it, that's not too good. And wives, what about you? Now, you probably could think quicker when you wish you didn't have them. But when's the last time you thank God that you did have them? When's the last time you thank God for them? When's the last time that you spent, you know, we talk a lot in, you know, every political year, we get this political football about family values. It just sickens me. It's just a political football. It has no meaning because they really don't have any substance behind the things that they say. But, you know, we talk a lot about quality time. How much time do you spend with your spouse? And if you're not close and you don't have a close relationship, why is that? Is it because you're too busy? Let me tell you something, brethren. If you're too busy to spend time with your spouse, you're too busy. And you better cut back on something because you're paying too high a price. What about our children? You know, children, you don't have them very long. You know, I can remember when my son and daughter were born. It's like it was yesterday. Next month, my daughter will be 21, and my son will be, she'll be 20. And my son will be 19 this October. It just, where did the years go? they just go. Our oldest daughter, she's going to finish, have her bachelor's degree from college next year in June. Where does the time go? But you know what I remember most? You know what? You can busy yourself doing the right thing, too. You know, I used to think that, you know, doing the Lord's work is important. It's not more important than my family. I've got a responsibility to my family. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way. That you've got a family, you can't escape that. Even if you're doing a good work, you still got a family to raise, and God gave you that responsibility. You know what? Spending time with children now will pay dividends way, way in the future. How much heartache can they bring you in the future? They can bring you a lot of heartache. But, you know, you might spend time now, and that still might happen, but you can live with yourself because you know you've done all you can do. What about the parents that didn't spend the time, that got too busy in life? They thought they demonstrated love by giving their kids everything, but the thing that they needed most, the love and the time, they didn't give them. That's what kids need. They don't need things. They don't need style. They don't need to be with the latest fad. What they need is the love and the concern and the time with mom and dad. And let me tell you something, brethren, nothing replaces that. Nothing. Nothing replaces that. And if we get so busy in life that we forget the things that are important, and last but not least, the most important thing of all, God. Why do you have those relationships? Why do you have a job? Why do you have a nice home? Why do you live in the lifestyle that you live in? Why do you have the blessings of living in this country? You think you have it because you're American? You think you have it because you live in the greatest country in the free world? You have it because of the God of heaven. That's why you have it. You don't have it because you're an American. And you don't have it because you live in the United States. You have it because you're a creation of the Almighty God. You have a blessing. But you know, sometimes, you know the old saying? We sometimes don't appreciate what we have until we don't have it anymore. What would it be like if we had to turn the clock back to live like the first century Christian had to live, where he could be put to death for his faith? Could you do that? You know, I have to ask myself that a lot. I read that, and you know what? I've got to be honest. I've got to be honest with myself. I hope I would, but I really don't know. I'm wondering until I'm faced with that. But you know, if I understand how valuable it is, if I understand what it's worth, if I understand what it means, yes, I'd be able to do it because I'd understand what it costs. Why don't we understand that? You know, when I was in West Virginia a couple weeks ago, my good preacher friend up in West Virginia was telling me that one of the Filipino preachers came over here for a visit. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever been to the Philippines. It's a very poverty-stricken country. 70% of the people who live in that country live below the poverty level. He came over to this country. You know what he said? And I quote him. He says, "This is heaven." You know what my preacher friend said? That's the problem. People think they've made it already, but they haven't made it. You know what? This isn't heaven. Heaven is nothing like this earth. And we need to remember that. This is a temporal. You know, life here is good compared to a lot of other places, but this still ain't heaven. This isn't utopia. And just look around and you know that's true. But you know what? Sometimes we're so blessed that we forget that. And we get so busy with life that we don't run our life. Our life runs us. And what does it do? It keeps us busy. And we compromise our responsibilities to God. Sad part of this tale is, someday the bill's coming due. We're going to have to give account for how we handle our time. Is God going to accept that we were too busy in life? I'll let you answer that for yourself. Second compromise, Exodus chapter 8, verse number 25. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, "Go sacrifice to your God in the land." Now, you know what he wanted them to do? Yeah, go ahead. Go and sacrifice to your God, but go right out here where I can see you. Don't don't go very far. I want to be able to keep my hand on you. So he wanted them to go close, but you remember what Moses and Aaron said, we can't do that. We can't offer what the Egyptians have to God. That'd be an abomination to God. We can't do that. We've got to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, and we've got to sacrifice to God on our own. We can't sacrifice to the Egyptians. That'd be an abomination. But sacrificing the lamb. You know what this is, brethren? This is the first example of convenient religion. People thought the... You know what the people thought in the Bible history, the first example of convenient religion was? That when the idols were put in Dan and Bethel, when they said, oh, that's too far for you to go. You don't want to go all the way down to Jerusalem. You just come down here in 1 Kings chapter 12 and you worship here because that's too far for you to go. No, this is convenient worship. Just worship right here. You don't have to do all that. You don't have to go out there 3 days' journey. You can just worship right here. And you know what? We live in the most convenient society upon the face of this earth. We have it all at our fingertips, don't we? Flip a switch, you got electricity. Turn on a tap, you got running water. If you've got a problem, you take a pill. If you've got a problem, you go see a doctor. We got a quick fix for everything, don't we? And you know, we just got it convenient. And you know what? We try to make religion. People are trying to make religion convenient. And we try to pick religion like we go and pick a laundry detergent at the grocery store. We just go down the aisle and see which one suits us. Brethren, that's convenient religion. That's never satisfied God. Who is worship given to? Given to God. We're worshiping God. We're not worshiping ourselves. We're not here to please self. We're not here to please any man or group of men. We're here to worship God. And convenience is something that man has come up with as a selling point of religion. You know, I got a sermon I put together some years ago called Marketing Religion. And it's unbelievable how America markets religion. It's sickening. We make it, it's like telemarketing. We just, you know what people do? It's like they go place to place to see where they get the best deal. It's like when you decide to make an investment with your money. What do? You check it out and see where you're going to get the best yield for your money. People do the same thing with religion. They go and choose a religion by where they think they're getting the best deal. Well, I don't think anybody can give you a better deal than God. But you see, convenient religion. Today, Satan wants to make it convenient for us. You know what most people believe in the world? If I'm a good Joe, I keep the old law. I keep the Ten Commandments. I don't cheat on my spouse. I don't cheat my neighbor. I pay my taxes. I'm going to heaven. You know the average person believes that? And don't tell me they don't. I've talked to enough of them. I know they do. You know why? Because that's convenient. That's easy. You know, everybody should treat their neighbor right. Everybody ought to be faithful to their spouse. Everybody ought to not cheat anyone else. And everybody ought to be an honest person. That ought to be true of everyone. But you know, if you do that, somehow you're a special person. And you equal, and you deserve heaven. Brethren, the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says a little bit more to it than that. But you know what? Convenient religion has never pleased God. Go back and read 1 Kings 12 about the little episode in Bethel and Dan. You know what the Bible says? It says it became a sin to Israel. It became a sin to Israel, but you know, on paper it made a lot of sense, didn't it? Don't go all the way down to Jerusalem. But you know what his problem was? His problem was that he figured if they went all the way down there, Jeroboam and Rehoboam, what they figured, if they went all the way down there, then they would stay there and he would lose them. So to keep them from going, he made it convenient for them. Isn't that what men are doing today? You know the fastest growing church in our country? What do you think it is? Mormon religion? No. Seventh-day Adventist? No. Jehovah's Witness? No. Roman Catholic? No. They're called community churches. You know why they're called that? Because they appeal to the community. They built one in Minnesota. You know how many members it has? 6,000, and it's growing by at least 100 a month. It's become the mecca of a model to build a church. You know how they did it? They went into this little town in Minnesota. You know what they did? They went out and they took a survey of the five surrounding cities. You know what they asked people? What do you want in a church? What do you look for in a church? And they compiled all that up. You know what they did? They built a church and they put all that in there. They put all of it in it. You name it, they got it. You want a youth program? They got that. You need drug and alcohol abuse rehabilitation? They got that. You want aerobics? They got that. You want to be able to get into singles so you can meet other people and you can get married and meet people of your own faith? They got that. You need to have worship service at night because of conflicts with your job during the day? We got that. And you know what? That thing is just caught on fire. And everybody's going down and see what the secret is. Here's the secret. It's convenient religion. And you know what? It's worked in every age. And you know what? We can pack them in an old one, too. We could pack them in here where we'd have to build another auditorium bigger than the one we got right now if we make it convenient for people. But you know what? We wouldn't be helping their soul any. We wouldn't be giving them any spiritual life. And we wouldn't be doing anything that God's pleased with. Remember what God said? Simple statement that Jesus made while upon earth in John 4:24. God is a spirit. They that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. How hard is that to understand? Who do we worship? These people went out and wanted to know what pleased men. They built a church that pleased men. They missed the point. I'm going to tell you one of my pet peeves. You know, in a few years, you'll be able to know all of them. But here's another one. People that say, I don't get anything out of worship. I got a simple answer to that. What do you put in your worship? And why do you come to worship? If you come to worship to be entertained and for to get something out of it and not to give anything, then you're always going to be dissatisfied. Because you've came here, I hope, to worship the God of heaven. That's why you came here. If you came for every other reason, you're going to be disappointed. Convenient religion, it does not work. But you know what? You know this third one, he continually did it. What would he do every time the plagues came? He says, oh, I've sinned. I mean, it's like a broken record. He says, I've sinned. Entreat the Lord on my behalf. I'm sorry, I'll let you go. So what's Moses do? He goes out there, petitions God, takes away the frogs, takes away the light, takes away the hail, takes away the boils, takes away the darkness. What does Pharaoh do? He saw that they were gone. He hardened his heart. And he wouldn't let them go. He went back on his word. That's compromise, brethren. If Moses wanted to treat the Lord, take away all the plagues, Pharaoh would let them go. But he still had to have control. Satan would love for us to compromise this way. Obey the gospel, but don't get too involved. Don't go overboard in it. Don't become a fanatic about it. You ever heard the term holy roller? Anybody ever called you that? Does that offend you? If it does, why? Anybody ever told you you're just gone on religion? That bad thing? You see, Satan doesn't want you to be committed. Oh, you can obey the gospel. You can come to church, but don't do anything else. Just do that. But you know what? We forget one very important thing. One of the steps to becoming a child of God is a little thing that we call confession. And I think we greatly misunderstand what that means. Confession is a statement. I think we've equated confession to being a statement that we make that we believe Jesus Christ, the Son of God. We believe that's all that's involved in confession. No, brethren. Do you realize what that statement means when you make it? You've made the statement that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. What does that mean? He is Lord of your life. He is greater than I am. He has authority that I do not have. What am I supposed to do for the rest of my life? Be faithful to what I said I would do. But you know what? We make that confession and we go on our way. We are supposed to be faithful to that confession for the rest of our life. Now, brethren, now, Keith, are you talking about perfect perfectionists? No. I'm talking about being committed. I'm talking about not going back on a word and living a double life, living the life of a hypocrite. What did Jesus condemn in the Pharisees that he hated? Hypocrisy. He looked at them and says, outwardly, they look like they're religious, but inwardly they're full of dead man's bones. Read Matthew 23. It's not a pretty chapter, but it's accurate. It's accurate. In Matthew 15, verse 8 and 9, he says, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Why? For they teach for doctrine the commandments of men. Brethren, when you became a Christian, you committed your life to God. Have you went back on your word? Now, you don't have to answer to me. But I guarantee you, there's somebody you're going to answer to about that. And that's the God of heaven. And he knows and you know whether or not that you've done that. You know, don't be evangelistic. Don't teach your neighbor. Don't worry about sharing the gospel with anybody. Keep it to yourself. Don't share it with anybody. You know why a lot of people don't teach? They're selfish. Let's admit it. We're selfish. We're saved. Why should we worry about anybody else? I tell you, brethren, you remember what 1 Timothy 4:16 says? Told Timothy to preach the gospel. In doing so, he would save those that hear him, but he would also save himself. Do you know? I once heard a preacher make this statement, and it really bothered me. He said, he made this statement, and I had to think about it for a long, long time. He says, if I'm the only one that I save, then I'm probably not doing my job as Christian. And I had to think about that for a while, and I thought, well, that might not be necessarily true. But stop and think about it over a lifetime. Should my life affect somebody else? Should my life as a Christian affect somebody else? It had better. You know who the salt and the light of this earth is? It's not the world. It's us. Matthew 5, 13 through 16. And when we make a commitment to God, and you know what one of my favorite passages in the Bible is Ecclesiastes 5, 2 through 5. Where it talks about making a vow. It says, when you make a vow, remember God's in heaven, you're upon earth. Let your words be few. And it says, pay what you have vowed. God has no pleasure with somebody that makes a vow and does not pay. You know what the text says? It's better not to vow than to vow and not to pay. That agrees with 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 20 through 22, that says the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. You know, people say, well, you're painting a pretty dim picture. No, brethren. I'm just saying that the life of a Christian is a full-time job. I'm just saying it's a lifestyle. It's a way of life. That's what we committed ourselves to. Let's be faithful to it and let's not compromise. And then, in chapter 10, verse 7 and 11, who are they going to worship? They would allow men to men to go and worship, but the woman and the children must stay behind. Now, why would he want them to do that? Because they'd have to come back and get them. They wouldn't leave them there. They'd have to come back and get them. Now, see, they would. Moses answered, we must all go. We're all accountable. Same uses the same tactic today, trying to get us to compromise and remain in bondage. You know what? I've seen a lot of people that's been lost because of their spouse. I've seen a lot of people lost because of their children. I've seen a lot of people be lost because of their brethren. Why? We're all accountable as an individual. I'm accountable, you're accountable. Why would I allow somebody else to cost me my soul, whether it's my wife, whether it's my children, whether it's my brother or my father or my mother or my brother? Why would I allow it? How can that be better? You know what? I always remember the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And I remember the brother wanting Abraham to send somebody back from the dead and warn his brothers that they might not come to this awful place. You know what that was a demonstration of? That was a demonstration of the highest form of love that he never had time nor exhibited while he lived, but he understood when he died and he couldn't do nothing about it. Now, brethren,
we all are accountable to God as individuals. What another person does is their choice. Whether it's my wife, whether it's my children, whether it's my parents, whether it's my brother, whether it's my brother or sister in Christ, they have their decisions to make. I have my decision to make. But we all must make a decision. Why would I allow? You know, I have tried to live by a commitment that I have made to myself. Keith Greer may be lost one day, but I'm going to live to the best of my ability. If Keith is lost, it's because of Keith. It won't be because of anybody else. It will be because of me. I have seen people leave the church over what somebody else did. How does that make things better? How does that make them better? How many times have you went to see somebody who's out of duty and said, well, hey, why are you bothering me? Brother so-and-so here, or sister so-and-so, they've got more problems than I've got. You know, that might be true, but how does that make it any better for you? You still got problems, and you still need to get your life straight. I'll go talk to them, too, but you have responsibility. We need to remember that all of us have a responsibility to God, and none of us are going to be left behind in this. And, you know, brethren, how many people have you talked to who said, I can't obey the gospel? If I do that, I condemn my parents. You know, I had a young man tell me that, and I just had tears rolling down my eyes. What can I tell him? All I could say is, if your parents could talk to you, if they had the ability to speak to you right now, they would say, look at that book. Do what that book says. Because you know why they tell you that? Because they really love you. You know, I can't speak for your parents. They'll stand before God on what they did. I'm not their judge. God's their judge. Let God judge them. We're not talking about your parents. We're talking about you. What are you going to do? What they did has no reflection on what you're going to do. But you know what? That's a real stumbling block for many people. That's not imaginary. You know, I know of a young lady who was put out of the house because she went against the family religion. She was thrown out of the house at 17 years old because she obeyed the gospel. You know, brethren, sometimes we think it's easy. It's not always the case. Sometimes it costs a great deal. But you know what? She weighed the cost. She counted the cost. And she knew that her soul was more precious than that relationship that she had with her parents. I commend the young lady. I know it wasn't easy. And you know, to this day, as far as I know, they've never mended that relationship. That's not her fault. That's her parents' stubbornness. All she did is try to do what God wanted her to do. How could that be a bad thing? How could that be a bad thing? One more compromising lesson is yours. Here's one that the devil uses, and he's got this down to science. In Exodus 10, he tried to say, okay, go out there and worship God, but leave your flocks behind. Leave your possessions. You know, I remember listening to the children could go, but he wanted to keep their possession. Persons and tie them to the wealth and prosperity. Satan still works that way today. You know, I remember when I was very, very little. You know, you ever remember how you hear things in the sermon? You don't remember the whole sermon, but there's something in the sermon that kind of sticks in your mind. And this preacher said one time, he said, you know, I knew a man that he was converted. The only thing that wasn't converted was his pocketbook. And I thought about, what in the world is he talking about? What does his pocketbook have to do with his conversion? But you know, I've grown to understand what he was talking about. You see, he was converted, but he wasn't fully converted because there were some things he wasn't going to part with. There were some things that were more important to him that he wasn't willing to give to God. You know, there's sometimes people are converted to God, but they're converted on the limitation that there's certain things that are exempt from service to God. Now, let me give you an example for you to consider. You know, when you're converted, you know, one of the things you say, husbands and wives, when you get married, What one of the things you say when you stand before the preacher, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in health and in prosperity? What does that basically mean? That basically means when it's good and when it's bad. That means at all times. What about being a Christian? If we're really converted, that means I'm converted with all of my ability, with all the abilities and everything that I have. You know what we are, brethren? If we really get down to nuts and bolts of things, we're nothing but stewards. That's it. We don't own a thing in this world. Everything that you and I own belongs to the Master. He's given it to us to use for a few years. He's blessed us with it. He's given it to us. And he's given us the ability to use it in the way that we see fit. Now, if we want to abuse it, if we want to misuse it, that's our choice. But God's given us to use it to his glory, to his honor, or use it in a selfish way. And let me explain and give you a couple examples. We all live in a house. We all have been blessed in a living dwelling place. How many of us use our houses to the glory of God? You know what's a thing of the past? You know what becomes a thing of the past? And when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time in people's homes. I can remember every Sunday night. I can remember during golf meeting, every night we went to somebody's house. Every night we were together. Brother, I'm telling you, the last 10 years, I don't remember that. I don't see that. We don't spend time together. We don't spend time in each other's homes. We don't spend precious time together. Why is that? That house is nothing more than a possession. It's something that God blessed us with. You know what? If you're worried about what the brethren think about your house, then they've got the wrong attitude to begin with. It doesn't make a difference what it is. What makes a difference is how we use it. What about not, let's talk about something else for a minute. What about when we can get together? Do you enjoy being with the brethren? Yeah, I'm here every Sunday and Wednesday. No. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about other times. Do you enjoy being with brethren? Now, let me give you something to consider for a minute. If you don't, let me ask you a question. Who do you think is going to be in heaven? Just the people you like? You know what I heard a Christian tell me one time? He said, you know, I hope brother so-and-so don't make it. I said, I got news for you. You better not worry about brother so-and-so. You better worry about yourself. Because you know what? We're a family. Families want to spend time together. I worry about people that don't like to spend time together. That worries me. Let me tell you something that impressed me about the very first time I ever came in this building. One of the things that impressed me is how many people talked to me the first time I came in this building. Now, I know I was a visiting preacher, and I know that I came here to talk to you about the Word, but you know, I've been in situations like that where people ignore me. I don't like to admit that, but I've been in situations like that. But I'm going to say this, and I'll probably regret that I said it, but I'm going to say it anyway. And I was impressed that when the amen was said, that the building didn't clear out. That impressed me. Because you know what that told me? There are people that like to spend time together. Brethren, don't ever lose that. You don't know what that's worth. You don't know what that says to other people that come in those doors. You don't know what that says about the relationship that you have as a family of God. Now, you know what? That doesn't mean we're perfect. It doesn't mean we're all going to go fishing together. It doesn't mean that we're all going to become buddies. But it does mean that we're like precious faith and there's something about one another that we can learn to love. And that's that we are like precious faith, and we all have a hope of going to heaven when we die. You know what? I want every child of God to go to heaven. If there's any child of God that I don't want to go to heaven, then that's a child of God that I had better really, really work on and work on myself so I can become with the attitude that I want him to go to heaven. Now, you know what, brethren? These compromises are alive and well in 1998. How do you minimize them? Very simple. Recognize them. Don't allow yourself to get too busy in life. Don't allow convenient religion to take place of what you know God required you to do. Don't go back on your word. Be faithful to the things that you commit yourself to do. And understand that all of us have a personal responsibility to God. Nobody can do your work for you. Nobody can do my work for me. We all have to do our own work. And last but not least, remember that everything that you have, first and foremost, belongs to God. Use it for His honor, for His glory, and He'll be blessed, and you'll be blessed. Brethren, by the power of God, Pharaoh finally did relent. But you know the sad part of this whole story is it's the closing of it. Did the children of Israel learn this lesson about compromise? No. Because you know what they did? They ended up compromising themselves. They ended up compromising God's law, and eventually they were destroyed as God's people first went into Assyrian captivity. 135 years later, they went into Babylonian captivity, and they were destroyed as a nation, not because God couldn't stop it, not because God didn't love them anymore, but because they compromised what God told them to do. They made concessions that God warned them not to make. Brethren, do we think we will escape too? Do we think that we can make concessions and we will turn out any better? We can't. Let us commit ourselves and to understand that the only that God has told us to do. And let us remember, we can't compromise, we should compromise. When it's a way that we can compromise and we can make peace, that's what we should do. But when there's a time when it's over a matter that God has legislated, when there is a pattern to follow, there is a course that we must pursue, we cannot give in. We must stay on course. And do not allow Satan to convince you that you can compromise and that God will accept. If you're here tonight, one of the ways that God or Satan trying to get you to compromise is believing and let you believe that you have time. You've heard a sermon today. You heard it last Sunday. You'll hear it again next Sunday. Maybe you will. Maybe you won't. And maybe I'll give it and maybe I won't. You know, somebody asked me one time, Keith, do you ever really consider that when you stand up there in front of people, that might be the last time you ever preach? Let me tell you, I do consider that. I do consider that. You know why? Because I know a friend of mine who preached a gospel sermon on Sunday night. He died on Monday morning. And he was in good health as far as he knew. You know, that wasn't the question of my life. That can happen to anybody, me, anybody else. And what I'm trying to say is, don't take life for granted. It's too precious. Don't take your opportunities for granted. You're not going to have them forever. And if you have something in your life that you need to fix, fix it. If you need to obey the gospel, do that. If you're here and you need to make your life right, do that. Whatever you need here, whatever it is that we can help you do to make your life right with God, we stand ready to assist you. We stand in the same.